This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. For some time now, there's been a low rumble in the field of psychiatry. Recently, that rumble turned into a loud declaration that it's time for a profound shift in how we understand mental illness.
That declaration came from the National Institute of Mental Health, the nation's largest funder of mental health research. And it has to do with how mental illness is defined. Let's start by taking a step back and considering how most other medical diagnoses are made. For example, doctors diagnose cancers based on biological and genetic data from biopsies, lab tests, and sophisticated medical imaging technology. In other words, doctors look at the cancerous cells themselves rather than the symptoms they cause.
But for mental illness, it's different. Diagnoses are based on symptoms. There's no biopsy for bipolar disorder, no sophisticated lab test yet for schizophrenia. But there is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, or DSM. It's one of the most important tools in psychiatry today. The DSM is a reference manual that categorizes mental illness based on symptoms.
Well, Dr. Thomas Insull, director of the National Institute of Mental Health, has now said he wants to move psychiatry in a completely different direction, away from the DSM. He says the DSM lacks scientific validity, that in other branches of medicine, for example, we don't diagnose fevers. We look for the underlying pathogens that lead to spiking body temperature. Insull says it's time for mental health research to officially do the same. As long as the research community takes the DSM to be a Bible, we'll never make progress, Insull told the New York Times. Biology never read that book.
The NIMH funds $1.5 billion of research every year. Some have called the move away from the DSM a bombshell. But other mental health experts say that it is long overdue, even if it's a change that will have no impact on mental health patients today.
Whatever your take, the NIMH's move is the biggest one so far to push psychiatry firmly into the realm of biology and brain science. It's the leading edge of the most significant paradigm shift experienced by the field in 50 years. So how will it change research? What impact will it have on treatment and on the fundamental way we view and understand mental illnesses? Well, joining us to answer these big questions is Dr. Bruce Cuthbert. He's director of the NIMH's Division of Adult Translational Research and Treatment Development. He's also on the front lines of these changes at the National Institute of Mental Health. Along with Dr. Thomas Insull, the agency's director, he is leading the development of a new set of research criteria that are different from the DSM. He joins us today from Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Bruce Cuthbert, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you. And I should say, in a few moments, we'll also be joined by the incoming president of the American Psychiatric Association, which publishes the DSM. But Dr. Cuthbert, let me start with you. What is it that prompted Dr. Insull's blog post and later the article that appeared in Scientific American that got everybody's attention? Because as I understand, this move towards more biological fundamentals when it comes to mental health has been going on for some time, and yet his blog post really did sort of shake up the psychiatric and mental health world this past week or so. So why now?
We have been working on this new project, the RDoC project, actually since 2009 to lay the formative stages and start developing it. We are just in the process of funding some of our research grants in this area. This is essentially a large research project to tell us how we should use genetics and what we know about neural circuits and behavior to think about mental disorders in a whole different way. And we're trying to really accelerate this process so that we can move our research forward faster than we have been in the past.
There's a couple things going on here. One is that there's nothing in Thomas Insull's statement that I can see that says, look, the way we treat mental illnesses today is going to change. But it's rather about how research is going to be focused going forward. But let me ask you, how is it that you and the NIMH see the DSM having influenced research in the mental health field so far?
So you have to look back in time to answer that. The current structure started with the DSM-3 in 1980. Before that time, psychiatrists couldn't really even agree on diagnoses because they used such different criteria and intuitive ideas. The DSM-3 set in place a firm structure for diagnosis that allowed us to achieve diagnostic reliability. That had a huge positive influence and really set the field on a path forward that really allowed much of the modern research that we have today. However, any system outlives its time. At that time, symptoms were the only way they had to diagnose disorders, as you noted in your introduction. Now, we have a tremendous amount of information about genetics, neuroscience, and behavioral science, but it does not map onto the DSM disorders. These mechanisms like reward circuits, fear circuits, working memory, cut across many of our current diagnostic categories. So the only way really to understand them is to do research on those neural systems directly, rather than piecemeal in all these different categories.
Hmm. Now, just to be more specific and perhaps to put it into terms that are more accessible to the layperson, Dr. Thomas Insull, the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, wrote that imagine deciding that EKGs, you know, commonly used to measure heart activity, were not useful because many patients with chest pain did not have EKG changes. That's what we've been doing for decades when we reject a biomarker because it does not detect a DSM category. I mean, in other words, he's saying that there has been a lot of research, maybe that's focused exclusively on things that can be measured vis-a-vis these symptoms in the DSM, meaning that perhaps a lot of legitimate research or important questions have gone unanswered or unexamined?
Yes, that's correct. If you assume that everyone with a disorder like major depression or schizophrenia has exactly the same thing wrong with them, then you'll have a really hard time finding new treatments because we now understand these to be syndromes. They're patients with a collection of somewhat related symptoms, but they don't form a tight disease entity. So depression is sort of like saying, I have chest pain. There are a lot of different reasons that you could come into a clinic reporting that you are depressed. But we need to do more tests to see exactly what might be wrong with particular behavioral functions or neural circuits or genetic risk patterns that could influence how we could treat that person more effectively. Mm. This is all a move towards what is being called across all of medicine, precision medicine.
Precision medicine. And yes. Explain a little bit more about that. I mean, that sort of has to do with the example that we used earlier about how cancers are diagnosed.
That's right. We now know, for instance, there was a recent article in the New York Times that endometrial cancer and colon cancer, certain types of those cancers, actually have identical genetic patterns. And so the treatment for those particular types might be identical. Whereas before, we really defined them by where it occurred, in the endometrium versus the colon. So this is the idea that we specifically identify these subgroups of disorders that are actually all really do represent one unique disease entity, and then we can develop a very finely tailored treatment for that disease entity. In other words, we are being much more precise in our diagnosis and our treatment.
Dr. Cuthbert, let me ask you, there are some out there who say, who are even more forceful in their criticism than you are, and they say that because of the psychiatric and mental health field's reliance upon the DSM and symptoms-based diagnoses of mental illnesses, that, in fact, research as a whole into mental illnesses has basically been stalled or stalled more than it should have been for the past 20 or so years. Do you believe that?
It has not been stalled. We have learned a tremendous amount about the brain, and we found out a lot about these different syndromes. But as we increasingly see genetic risks that cut across disorders, we realize that we can speed the research up and get it going even faster by shifting to this view of looking at neural circuits. Mm-hmm. It is important to remember, though, that the DSM does, in fact, remain the best instrument we have for diagnosing disorders today and into the foreseeable future.
Well, listeners, we're talking about a major paradigm shift in the world of mental illness research. The nation's largest funder of mental health research, the National Institute of Mental Health, says it will no longer use the DSM, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, as a basis by which to decide what research is worth pursuing when it comes to understanding the brain and mental health. The NIMH says we need a more science and biology-based system by which to understand mental illnesses. And they're moving forward in a new project to do just that. So listeners, what do you think? Do you think this is the right direction for psychiatry, for mental health illness and research? Do you think this is the way we should be trying to understand all manner of disorders that affect the brain, from bipolar disorder to schizophrenia to mood disorders? Is reducing these mental illnesses down to the biology of the brain the way forward? Or do you think that we're missing something? Do you think we're missing the bigger picture of what it means to be mentally ill in the 21st century? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment online at our website. That's radioboston.org. I'm speaking with Dr. Bruce Cuthbert. He's the director of the National Institute of Mental Health Division, I should say, of Translational Research and Treatment and Development. He's one of the lead doctors putting together the NIMH's new protocols for how they go about funding the research that they will put dollars towards when it comes to mental health research. Dr. Cuthbert, if you could just stand by for a moment, I'd like to introduce into the conversation Dr. Paul Sommergrad. He joins us today from Chicago. He's the incoming president-elect of the American Psychiatric Association. That is the group that publishes the DSM. The DSM-5 is on its way any day now. It's set to be published later this month. Dr. Paul Sommergrad, welcome to you.
Thank you very much, Meghna.
It's terrific to have you. You're well-versed in the NIMH's position, and you also are versed in both the praise and criticism that the DSM has received over time. So let me first ask you, what do you make of the fact that the nation's largest funder of mental health research has now said it wants to move beyond the framework that the DSM has provided so far in terms of how we understand mental illness?
Well, actually, I don't think that this is something new. While Dr. Insel's blog post has gotten a lot of attention, the research domain criteria, sometimes known as RDOCs, that NIMH has been developing have actually been in process for about 6 or 7 years. And actually, the American Psychiatric Association and many leading psychiatrists have been working very closely with the NIMH on the development of RDOCs, just as, frankly, the NIMH worked with us, the American Psychiatric Association, and the International psychiatric community on the development of DSM-5. So we think that these are actually complementary approaches, and as Bruce mentioned, RDOCs is not something that's going to replace current clinical evaluation and diagnosis. For that, the DSM-5 is going to be the guidebook, which is going to be critical for the foreseeable future for being able to take better care of patients. But we certainly support moves to create a more robust research environment if for psychiatry and for mental illnesses, because these are incredibly disabling and common conditions, and we need to do much better and be able to care for patients.
Let me ask you, Dr. David Kupfer, who's the chair of the DSM-5 task force, released a statement in which he said he also hopes that the next DSM aims to encourage further or future directions in research. So he still sees it as a potentially important research tool going forward. Is that what you continue to hope for the DSM-5?
Yeah, I mean, so let's think about it from a practical standpoint, and Dr. Insel even mentioned this in his blog posting. So perhaps rather than saying you have only people with major depression, which is one type of a mood disorder, in a research study, perhaps you'll bring in people with related sets of disorders, perhaps a variety of individuals who are coming to a mood disorder clinic, or perhaps mood disorders and anxiety disorders, because there's an overlap between those conditions. So the use of DSM-5, the use of diagnostic and clinical criteria for evaluating patients will continue, and then I think there's going to have to be essentially a crosswalk between DSM and the RDOC system, so we can make sure that those other additional new types of investigations can go forward in ways that relate back to existing populations. And the field will evolve, frankly, just as all of clinical medicine evolved. Most of clinical medicine has evolved from starting out with symptoms and syndromes to more fundamental biological investigation and then redefinition of those syndromes as we learn more about biology. And that, I expect the same thing will happen with both psychiatry and psychiatric neuroscience.
And that's exactly what I think I detect here in this sort of years-long long bubbling in terms of the conversation around biology, the brain, and mental illness. Because I guess what I'm saying is that I detect what's now officially a frustration that science and psychiatry have not moved as far forward as perhaps they could have in the past, you know, 20, 25 years, or at least at the same rate that other clinical professions have. I mean, for example, Dr. Thomas Insull, again, the director of the NIMH, has also been quoted as saying, "I look at the data and I'm concerned. I don't see a reduction in the rate of suicide, for example, or prevalence of mental illness or any measure of morbidity. I see it in other areas of medicine, and I don't see it for mental illness." That was the basis for his comment when he says people with mental illness deserve better. And I wonder if you share that frustration that the field hasn't moved as far as maybe it could have.
I do and I don't. I think that the field has certainly moved forward. I mean, our abilities to both diagnose and care for patients is much better than it was 50 or 75 years ago or even 30 years ago. We have a wider range of not only psychopharmacologic treatments, we have much more targeted and evidence-based psychotherapeutic treatments. Cognitive behavioral therapy, for example, didn't exist in the same way as it does now 30 years ago and has proved to be effective for a wide range of psychiatric and other conditions. This is among the most complicated areas in all of, not just medicine, but all of science. The brain is extraordinarily complicated. And it's only really in the last 20, 25 years maximum that we've begun to have the genetic, the neuroimaging capability to understand what the brain looks like in its real time, real functioning, or to be able to find both these circuits and also some of the genetic factors which may be related. But I want to add one other thing, because you said something earlier, which is very important. Psychiatric illnesses are also very human illnesses. They're very intimate. They're very personal. You know, there was a really nice article about a woman's experience with bipolar illness and the effect that that had on her sense of self and the importance of understanding that. So at the same time that we look for the best science we can find in terms of neurobiology and understanding how we better take care of these very disabling conditions, we also have to be extraordinarily sensitive and open to the human cost and the human experience of this and make sure that we're working carefully with patients and their families.
Well, on that note, though, are you a little concerned that perhaps there's too much of a push to find a biological underpinning for all mental illness, that we may actually be, you know, losing sight of this bigger picture?
No, I think that this is, you know, again, an extraordinarily complicated set of issues and scientific problems, and I think this is one piece of many things that we need to be doing. But we also have to be attentive to the fact, for example, that patients with psychiatric and substance use illness have very high rates of medical comorbidities. Many of them die too young, that our services system have been cut back, and that we need to figure out the best way of actually providing care and providing services to real patients today. And frankly, that's one of the things that the DSM-5 is. It's a guidebook for experienced clinicians to help them take care of better patients, take better patient care now. And these other activities are things that I think we all need to be focusing on for a very much long-term development of better science in the field.
Listeners, that's Dr. Paul Sommergrad. He's the incoming president-elect of the American Psychiatric Association, the group that publishes the DSM. He's also chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at Tufts University. He joins us today from Chicago. I'm also speaking with Dr. Bruce Cuthbert. He is leading the research team at the National Institutes of Mental Health that are rewriting their research criteria away from the DSM in terms of how they fund research into mental health disorders. He joins us today from Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Cuthbert, I'll get back to you in just a moment, but we've got some great callers on the line, so let's hear from them. Angela is calling from Mansfield. You're on the air, Angela.
Hi. I have PTSD, and I just today read a book that discounted the idea of repressed memories of trauma. Now, and the basis on which the person's the author said that there is no such thing as repressed memories, is he can't find it scientifically. But I can tell you that not knowing that I'd been abused as a child and the consequences of that have made my life very difficult. And I'm 72 years old now, and I still have effects.
Yeah.
From when I was a child.
Angela,
and
I'm sorry, I don't think
you can find it.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think you bring up a terrific point that I want to turn to Dr. Bruce Cuthbert. Thank you so much for your call. Dr. Cuthbert, I imagine there are a lot of people out there who share Angela's concern and say, look, I or someone I know suffers from some sort of mental illness or ailment, and what if ultimately there is no biomarker or biological underpinning that's found for it? That doesn't necessarily negate their experience of the mental illness?
Not at all. These are real disorders. We should emphasize that we are not only talking about purely biological measures. The whole idea of RDoC is to connect what we know about the brain, but importantly, how it produces behavior. And all of our dimensions that we study in RDoC are about some kind of behavior or mental process. So, for instance, in the caller's question, one of the things that we want to study in RDoC is memory processes and how these may be affected by emotions like fear. So we may be able to get at a more scientific study, not just of biology, but important experiences people have in their lives, such as the caller's question about repressed memory. So this is not just a biological system that we're looking at.
Let's take another call. Wendy's calling from Newton. You're on the air, Wendy.
Hi. I'm particularly interested in, as far as the funding is concerned, how, if things go on, are they going to differentiate between behavioral neurology, neurology, and psychiatry in terms of the kind of research that that you're talking about? There are clearly overlaps in the meds that are being used these days, and therefore probably overlaps in terms of how the brain works.
Mm. Wendy,
but
thank you.
Politically, that funding issue is a big one.
Right, and especially since the NIMH is in charge of $1.5 billion of that funding. Dr. Cuthbert, we've just got a couple seconds to go, so I'm wondering if you have a quick answer to Wendy's question about how do you draw the line between psychiatric and other forms of neurobiological research?
Basically, neurology is defined by specific lesions in the brain like Parkinson's disease or strokes. Mental disorders now appear to be more disorders of brain circuits and connections among brain areas. So that's the quick answer.
Hmm. And Dr. Paul Sommergrad, we've just got about 30 or 40 seconds left to go here. Overall, is this the right direction for psychiatry as a clinical practice to go in? I mean, even though there's no change in terms of what a patient may experience today when they walk into a therapist or a doctor's office, do you one day want to see, I don't know, blood serum tests for a whole variety of mental illnesses?
Well, you know, we've included some of those already in DSM-5 where they exist. To the extent that those things will tell us the right way to diagnose and treat people, of course. We also want to make sure that we're doing the best possible clinical evaluations and doing that in ways that take into account the best things we know about treatment response, course of illness, and making sure that people have a human and humane response to their illnesses and can get the support they need to get better.
Dr. Paul Sommergrad is the incoming president of the American Psychiatric Association. He's also chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at Tufts University. He joined us today from Chicago. Dr. Sommergrad, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Bruce Cuthbert of the National Institute of Mental Health Division of Translational Research and Treatment Development, joining us today from Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Cuthbert, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, let us know what you think. This is a major shift in the world of psychiatry and mental illness research. Drop us a line with your comments at radioboston.org. And stick with us, because coming up next, new music from a new Boston band and why you should never miss the opening act. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.